Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Momentum Focus podcast. This is your host, or I am your host, Amia Freeman, and y'all know how I feel about saying that I'm the host, but whatever. It's us, we're here. I hope you have a cup of coffee or whatever, something cozy in your cup. And I hope that you are ready to really kind of dig into the conversation that is carrying over from what we've been talking about in the last season that I feel like was not a one and done, because we went to some hard spaces. We had a couple of guests that were on the podcast that their work professionally is to help you do the work to be well. And I've gotten emails, I've gotten DMs on Instagram, a few text messages on how those conversations are really helping people break some chains that they didn't even know were there, that they've just been coping and dealing, and they just thought it was a part of their identity. And they're realizing that somewhere they just began to settle and just call it good. So that I made a commitment that that's what this podcast would be for, is to invite you in, welcome guests, welcome the conversation, to change the narrative and the dialogue, and to literally not just hashtag it, but help you adjust your focus. So we're continuing in that conversation and we're continuing in the work. And if ever there's a conversation that's had here on the podcast, either with one of the mindfulness messages or one of our guests, if it feels like it has moved you to action that is helping you understand more of who you were created to be, helping you get beneath the surface, but you feel like the podcast itself got you there and then you don't know what to do next, would you reach out to me? Because all of the guests that I've brought on here have made themselves available as additional resources, or to point you in the right direction to find the resources that you need. So I just felt like I needed to say that, because we did go deep. And I've even had people say, man, Amia, like, you're deep. I'm like, would you prefer that I'd be shallow? Because I don't. And if you know me, you know I don't do small talk. Like, I loathe small talk and I cringe. I cringe at that. I just want to go in and say, how's your soul? Can we go there? But at any rate, I digress. To continue this work of being well and doing well and living well, you know how just before I hit record, we were talking about the work of wellness is so broad, and yet sometimes we diminish it as if it's a one and done of like, hey, get well. And my guest said, it's like taking out the trash, right? We pretend like that's what the work is, but it is a lifelong journey, and even, dare I say, a lifelong quest to go towards the life that you were called to live, as opposed to go towards the life that other people expected you to live, or that you've seen other people living. So you like the way they did it, so I'm going to pursue their quote unquote happy, or their goals even. So that today we're going to dive into that with an intention, again, of helping you adjust your focus so that your head and your heart start to help you understand what's your next step, what kind of goals can you set, who are you, which feels really broad, but to scale it back and start peeling back some of the layers of, man, I didn't even know that's who I was. I didn't even know that's what I enjoy. I think about like my kids, when they would meet new people, and my son would say, I would have never thought that I would have liked a friend like that, because he didn't know that particular characteristic trait, or he didn't know that that person could do a certain thing that brought him joy. And he said, I would have never guessed that I would have liked a person like that, quote unquote, because sometimes we box people in and we box ourselves in, and At any rate, I just keep in my mind, I just keep seeing this visual of like the kaleidoscope, and you turn the knob and you see all these different images show up the more you turn it. And if you face a different brighter light, another image starts to show up. What if we just start seeing things like that? That it's not so concrete, that like you get to evolve and become someone else and unlearn potentially who you've become. So, true to the work that we're doing here, I want to offer you a scripture, and it comes from the stack of cards that were given to me by a sweet friend, and she personalized them for me to be willing to sit with the verse and find myself in the story. And this comes from Psalms 20, verse 4, and it says, "May he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed." Where she's personalized it, she put my name in the verse smack dab in the middle, and it says, "May he give you the desire of your heart, Amia, and make all your plans succeed." So I would just invite you to put your name in there. May he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed. And if you have a tough time with that, I've been practicing a mindfulness breathing method that's called breath prayers. And on the inhale, you take the invitation of the inhale to literally fill your lungs up as if you were smelling the aroma around you. But I would say walk into a space that you fully appreciate, like the place that like brings you joy, kind of maybe serenity, maybe like anticipation of like, oh, this is my space. I couldn't wait to get here. And you step in that room or that building and you take a deep breath in and inhale it. May he give you the desire of your heart. And then on the exhale, it's as if you blew out candles or blew one of those dandelions and the seasons changing, and you watch all the petals fly away and make all your plans succeed. Inhale, may he give you the desire of your heart and make all your plans succeed as you exhale. I hope that helps you just to settle for where you are right now and make you aware and ready for our conversation. So I love social media for the fact that my guest, we met on social media. I met her on her Instagram. Well, she was doing an Instagram takeover for one of the certification companies that I carry, one of my fitness certifications. And so I rightly leaned in to see who is the face behind the brand, so to speak. So my guest today, her name is Darlene, and she is one of the contributing authors for NASM's Certified Wellness Coaching. And so most of y'all know that I do fitness and wellness as a profession, and as a confession. And the reason I leaned into the work that she was talking about was because it felt different. It felt different than a lot of the stuff that you see on social media, specifically in the work of coaching. Because right now, y'all, everybody thinks they're a coach. And literally, one of my cousins posted on Facebook, "Why is everybody thinking that they're a coach and their life ain't together? How about that?" And I'm like, right. But then it checked me because I stepped back and was like, wait, I'm a coach and my life ain't together. So that's another episode, or stick around because we'll keep talking about that. But I love the work that she's doing because she's also an author of a book titled The Better Than Fine Workbook. Ooh. You know the saying, "I'm fine, it's fine, I'm fine," right? So I want to hear more about the work that you're doing with that. But she does carry additional certifications in nutrition coaching, neuro-linguistic programming. Let's dive into that, as well as alignment yoga and trained in sleep coaching. Y'all, we're gonna have fun with this because she speaks my language because she's in the motivational meditation and mindfulness. And it's really cool to like see her face. I know you can't see her face, but to see her face as I was walking you through that breath prayer of her receiving it was a gift. So I know this conversation is going to be rich. I'm going to step back for a second and hand the mic over to Darlene Marshall, our guest today. And tell us what you're doing. Like, what do you do? What's a typical day look like for you? And what made you go into this area of fitness specifically?
You can't do an intro like that and expect me to just immediately talk about myself, because your intro with such grace and humility has set the stage for the impact that your little dandelion seeds are having in the world. And I want to begin by expressing not only appreciation on behalf of your listeners, but even appreciation from myself. As you were describing this breath prayer, and my own inhalation of my own calling, and we can talk about my beliefs around some of the things that you just shared. But also, as I thought of, like, okay, well, what are my dandelion seeds? And I was like, well, my dandelion seeds are ideas that I hope that other people receive. And immediately I was given back the grace and the resonance of you then saying that you had received some of my seeds. So to have having done a fair shake of, like, talking to people about my ideas, I have to say that I don't think that I have had an experience of being brought into a podcast and feeling the way that I feel now, already validated and held. And I just want to share that image with you, as a fellow practitioner, that, like, thank you for that, for kicking it off there, and thank you on behalf of the work that you're clearly already doing.
And let me slightly interrupt and just say that you and I
Oh.
are Wonder Woman sisters. Stop.
Our listeners who can't see that I have a shelves
Bracket man.
full of Wonder Woman. Amia and I are having a Wonder Woman off at the moment. Like, clearly you see the one with my stand. This is a trophy that one of my clients customized to, it was a tennis trophy, and that she's got a whip. And
Stop.
it's, yeah. Oh yeah.
So I'm like
Loves.
holding this, like, they're called fluffle balls, like
Yeah.
a koosh ball of a Wonder Woman. She's got a stuffed Wonder Woman. She's got Wonder Woman trinkets and toys and statues behind her. I've got a keychain. My son sent me a Wonder Woman, like, Barbie doll, so to speak, and she's still in the box. She shall never come out of that box. And I have my medal from where I ran a virtual Wonder Woman 10K.
I did that as a 10K as well. I have that in the house. But yeah, you can see this is my favorite copy of the book, my Funkos. This is Stan Lee.
See, I knew we were kindred, like, the moment I met
Yeah.
you. I knew it. Okay, so I'm giving you
Okay.
back the mic. Go for it.
So what do I do? On paper in my business card on my website, it says I'm a personal trainer and a wellness coach. And you'd asked, how did I come to do this particular flavor of fitness? But the story goes, and this is where I said, like, oh, we'll get to some of the stuff in your intro in terms of what I believe around calling and purpose and meaning and building a lifestyle that facilitates whatever reason that any of us are here. When I was 23, I was diagnosed with a connective tissue disorder. It's genetic, and essentially it means that the connective tissues, the ligaments, the tendons that hold my body together aren't built like everyone else's. Like, at the fiber level, I'm a mutant. I'm an X-Man, which is funny because I'm a Wonder Woman fan, but I always joke I'm an X-Man. And at that point in my life, I couldn't walk barefoot at all, more than like a step or two. So I had to put sneakers on to go to the bathroom at night. I couldn't carry anything in my left arm without my shoulder starting to subluxate, so like slide out of the socket. I was sewing professionally at the time. So I used to work in theater, and my hands would go numb by about 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I was having, like, neuropathy in my hands. And like I said, I was 23. So pretty fresh out of undergrad, pretty fresh into my adulthood, and experiencing things that most people don't deal with. Most people don't deal with until their ending phase in life. And I was fortunate in that I had made some assumptions about what life and living were like for everyone. I thought everyone was in constant physical discomfort, nearing dysfunction, because it had always been that way for me. And it's that way for many people in my family. And my now ex-husband was like, you should go to the doctor. Not, I'm not in pain. You shouldn't be like this. And that was the dawning moment of realization of like, oh, some of my assumptions are wrong. Like, you're not in constant, just crippling pain. Oh, I've mislearned some things. And so that's when I got diagnosed. And that moment in my life is a big pivot point. Because, and you know, if moments last longer than an instant, right? If moments can be a series of events, I was told by the physical therapist that I was referred to, and it was university insurance, so I had very limited options in terms of practitioners. And the physical therapist essentially told me that I wasn't going to get better, that what I have is progressive. I was only going to get worse. And I needed to adjust my expectations because I was a high school and collegiate athlete. I was a collegiate rugby player. I was tackling 200-pound women for fun. And I thought of myself as really like rugged and tough. And now you're going to tell me I need to fall in love with my couch. Mm. And fortunately, in that moment, something inside me said, when you were stronger, you didn't hurt so bad. You gonna get me in my feelings. So I intuitively, that athlete experience of my growing up, it's like, well, maybe I should just try to get strong, and then maybe my muscles could compensate for what my connective tissue lacks. Mm. And I'm very lucky that I had that thought, because most people who have what I have don't come to the right interventions early in their adulthood. And there are plenty of celebrity examples, like Lena Dunham has what I have, and she walks with a cane now, even though we're almost the same age, because she had different fitness influences than I do. And so I went into, in my very early 20s, how do I get as strong as possible? And it took me about 5 years of trial and a lot of error to figure a lot of foundational things out. But it was that moment when I realized that what I really wanted to do was help other people who are like me figure out how to function in a world where their bodies work differently than they were taught to expect. And what I've come to realize now is that's almost everybody, because the way that fitness and wellness are marketed gives us a lot of misinformation. So by this point, I'm 27, 28. I became certified as a personal trainer. I started working for a major international luxury fitness brand that taught me a ton. I spent 8 years working, managing kind of all levels of the personal trainer experience. I was mentoring, I was teaching anatomy, I was, you know, like really into fitness culture, but always through the lens of this was my literal medicine. This is what keeps my body literally together. And so it was never about how I look in my underwear. It was always about I get to thrive in the world when my body works, period. And somewhere along the way, I was like looking for more tools. I always worked with other people with chronic illness or catastrophic injury. And I was just hungry for tools. Okay, nutrition, obvious. That's an obvious one, right? Like, but what about sleep? What about time management? What about pick your variable? And eventually I kind of had all of the certifications that people in fitness get, yoga, mindfulness, motivational interviewing, whatever. And then I was exposed to the ideas of positive psychology. And you didn't mention it in the bio, which I don't shade you for. It's just the thing that tends to be the thing that people are like, woo about. So this is where I, if I'm not different already, this is where I get more different. Positive psychology is a scientific study of human well-being. And I was exposed to the ideas of positive psychology in 2018 while going through my divorce, and immediately felt the change in myself from these tools when applied well. And then in my thirst for more information, because then I realized like, oh, every fitness professional should be educated in the tools of positive psychology. Positive psychology has no direct practitioner. So if you think about it, like, the Western medical model applied to the mind is traditional psychology, right? What's wrong with you and how do we fix it? Mm. The flip of that, positive psychology, is what's right with human beings and how do we help you get more of that in your life? Mm. And you go to the doctor when you're sick, you go to the psychologist or the clinician when you having a mental health crisis. Who do you go to learn how to live well? And I am a strong believer. Fitness professionals have the highest contact hours of any practitioner. Fitness and wellness people are who need the tools of positive psychology to help people live well. And so I am one of the few fitness professionals, the only personal trainer in the world to have a master's in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. When I brought that vision to my former corporate employers, they thought it was neat, but they didn't think they could use it. So in February of 2020, I left, and not knowing what was coming. We all know what happens next. And then the world needed those tools more than ever. And so what's evolved for me is using all of these lifestyle tools to build lifestyles for individuals, for communities that support flourishing. Because we have to, and I rarely use the word have to about anything, but I genuinely believe that for us to actualize on our human potential, not only as individuals, but literally as a species, we have to find a way to live in accordance with what it means to be a human being. Mm. And if we are not respecting our humanity in our lifestyles and our expectations of one another, we cannot achieve all that we are capable of as a species. Yeah. So that's what I'm on about. NBD. There you go. Where you want to go? What do you want to talk about?
Well, you're speaking my language. Like, I'm trying to contain myself, because that kind of, to your point of where people go, and they kind of head tilt when you say positive psychology, because their head tilts either to the direction of tell me more or let me tune you out. Right. It's rarely do they sit in the middle with this genuine interest of like, let me see what I can potentially learn.
Yeah.
We, like, you know what I mean? Without judgment, like being keenly aware that we don't know all there is to know about us, because most of us are just products of either our environment or some kind of ridiculous standard that we thought we were supposed to live up to. But most of us don't know ourselves. Even right, like even from the standpoint, I've been talking to a lot of friends about just as you grow into friendships and you grow apart from people because you're becoming healthier and you realize like there was this codependency in your space of like not knowing yourself, that person fulfilled a gap that you didn't even know was there. Yeah. Right. And giving yourself the grace to grow and be well and relearn, who am I when I'm actually my healthiest? And do I genuinely need that person? Because we need each other. Or like, was there some space in both of us that was so jacked up that like we were feeding each other's junk? You know what I mean? Like some friends of mine, we used to joke about, you know, if you find me in a ditch and we're not sure how I got in that ditch, do me a favor and don't decorate it. Don't down in there.
Good line.
Right? Like,
good line.
Come down in there and decorate the ditch with me. Like, extend. And I think it's Brené Brown that talks about like the shame and guilt and the difference between the two. And I'm not going to retell her work, but like, there's a video that she put together that displays, there's a difference between the person that extends the hand that says, hey, can I help you get out? Or the person that extends the hand and says, pull me down with you. Right.
Or the person who shoves your head down so that they can get leverage.
Shoves your head down. Yeah. And if we don't know who we are, we're willing to receive whatever attention comes our way.
Oh, yeah. But I have so many thoughts. I mean, the first thing is around just the subject of friendship. And this goes back to Aristotle, right? Like the Aristotelian philosophy. Aristotle illustrates that, you know, we've got friendships where it's proximity, right? I've got neighbors who I'm buddies with because they're nearby. We've got friendships of transaction. So, oh, you're someone I do business with. You're a client who I like, and that's how we know each other. But really, our relationship is built on that dynamic. And then he talks about Aristotelian friendships, which, you know, we call them Aristotelian friendships. I don't even know what he calls them. But it's the idea that we're trying to help one another actualize on our potential, and that's the point of the relationship, right? Is the friend who is going to not just pull you out the ditch, but then also walk you back a quarter mile and go like, okay, so when you stepped off the curb and you saw that you were walking into mud, what was going on with you? because you see where that path leads. And if you didn't see, let me help you see. And then let me help you find a different path. That's like true resonant friendship. And it brings up for me as you're talking about this, and I thought about this in the intro too, is like, when you talk about wellness as a path or a journey, you know, I tell my clients all the time, like you're a process, not a light switch. And we're taught to think that change is supposed to be like flicking the light switch. Oh, I just decided I'm not gonna drink coffee tomorrow morning. But it's a process. If I'm respecting my body and I'm respecting my mind. And when you think about the point of wellness, to me, the point of wellness is integration into being my fullest expression of myself. And I intentionally avoid phrases like my best self or my most self, like whatever. No, just the person that you are right now is going to continue to evolve. Mm-hmm. And you've likely had experiences in your life that were confusing or misleading or overwhelming. And it means that there are lessons from those experiences that you have not yet integrated into your being. And to me, the purpose of effective wellness strategies are to respect the person that you are and nurture the person that you are becoming and create opportunities for, as you're saying, to unearth these ditches that we're turning our ankles in and go like, maybe I should walk somewhere else or fill that in. And that our most nurturing friendships are going to be the ones that are climbing out of the ditches with us or giving us a level up. And I, you know, this whole train of thought we have started with talking about positive psychology. You know, the people who shy away from talking about positive psychology typically are the people who think that it means toxic positivity or like fake yellow smiley face happiness, which is not what positive psychology is. But I understand why people have that reaction. But I can't tell you how many friends have been left at the side of the path in the last 3 years in growing into a person who has a platform and a voice and an opportunity, which is all very surreal for me anyway, because the narrative in my mind is like, I'm just some personal trainer who grew up on a dirt road. Right. I grew up on food stamps. My family isn't educated, right? Like, and to be, you know, in the room with some of the most famous psychologists in the room and in the world and have them listen to what I have to say is horribly surreal. And then to have you talk about like, oh, the face behind the brand. And I'm like, what brand? But the friends that I thought were my family, who, when I got up out of the ditch, maybe realized the ditch they were in and it hurt too much, or they don't agree with some of what I'm doing and that dissonance is enough that they don't want to be a part of it or whatever. Has been painful, but it's also a profound learning experience because the people who actually love me want to see me the most well expression of what I am capable of, and they believe in the mission that I am on. And what I actively have to choose every time the thought rises up of the friends, the people that I love, who are not engaged with my life now because of my changes, I actively ask myself to look at the people who are here, the people who are leaning in even more.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So this is just kind of how my brain works. And I'm scrambling to look up the title because my brain tends to work in song lyrics.
Sure.
And like, that's kind of how I find the connection of conversation because like they tell a story, right?
Yeah. I used to be a singer and a songwriter. So that is how my brain works too. What do you got?
You're going to appreciate this. So as you were talking about like growing up on the dirt road and coming up out of the ditch and walking alongside that same path and recognizing either I need to fill it in or I need to like have a real honest conversation with the friend, even if the friend is of ourself, right? With have a conversation with myself as my friend, right? Not even my former self, because that like she's still there, but she's not there, but she's still there. That's a whole other podcast. But like have a conversation with the person that helped you get out of the ditch and be willing that the conversation is not one-sided and walk with them. Walk with them, talk with them, be vulnerable enough to like stand still, and somebody's gonna be like, Mia's gone wooey, she's gone.
No, go woo. I like
yes,
woo.
So I'm about to go wooey for a second, but like I visualize that, like going on a walk with myself, because there are a lot, like I've really, it's been coming up in my mind a lot recently, like there are a lot of people that are unwilling to sit with themselves and reflect.
Like the cognitive dissonance is so uncomfortable, they can't lean into it. Yes.
Yes. Like we have bookshelves of books of like, we've read the book, we've heard the podcast, we've watched the movie, we've sat in the conferences, but we're not actually doing the work.
All the time.
Right. So the song that comes to mind is by the singer-songwriter Ava Cassidy. And the song is called Fields of Gold. It was redone by Sting many years later. But listen to, and I don't know if Ava Cassidy's version is the original, but it's very Woodstock folky, her and her guitar and a flower dress. Just, and all I saw was the dandelions of like, but dandelions aren't gold. So like you're walking through at peak, like season of the dandelion that's gold.
Or goldenrod.
Or goldenrod, yeah. Like you're walking and knowing, and there's a, I don't know, there's a whole analogy of literally like grounding in that, of like letting your feet touch the ground where you before were like, ah, that's dirty.
I grew up wild. So for me, I've always been like, put my feet in the dirt. My husband gets mad at me all the time. He's from the city and we live in the middle of nowhere and I never want to wear shoes, like ever.
Yeah.
So I'm always about dirty feet.
Yeah.
It's a
feel
thing.
The ground beneath you.
Yes.
A little bit.
But that's real. Like that's part of being human, is being connected to the woo around you. And sometimes the woo is as simple as grass and dirt and goldenrod and dandelions. And I dig that. I'm picking up what you're putting down. And I think that, you know, when we talk about actualizing or potential or mission or whatever word that you use for what you're on about, I do genuinely believe that in order to understand that purpose and that calling, it starts with, you know, we're talking about literal grounding, but meeting yourself where you are. And I think to your point, a lot of people hear messages like this, they read the books, they go to the conferences, the ba, 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 and they don't feel, we don't feel, maybe we're being judgmental, that they're internalizing it in an authentic way, right? And we would call that cognitive dissonance. But it takes bravery to look at the things that you have been taught and reconsider if they're true for you, because of all the other things that you would have to change if they are true for you. And I think that a lot of times when we talk about that former self and the conversation and the walk with the former self, I think there's many tendencies, but two of the big ones I encounter are the people who look back at who they were and they long for that person, right? I used to be athletic or a different shape, a different size, a different income, a different whatever. Or they look at that person and go, oh, what were you doing? And the deep regret and shame that can come with that kind of self-rejection. And I've recently been writing a lot for myself around, how do I meet that version of myself with appreciation? Right? For all of the things that she endured and learned and fought for, whether right or wrong, at least she was trying. Right?
Yeah.
And how can I have gratitude for even when she got it really wrong, and I have gotten it wrong so many times. But I wouldn't be here if I didn't try those mistakes and then bother to reflect on them. And that's what I mean by integration, is I'm not going to push it away. I'm not going to run away from it. I'm not going to shame myself for it. I'm going to really look at it and go, okay, what can I learn here a decade, 20 years later?
Yeah. You had earlier you said a couple of things that I've just been trying to jot some notes, and I've been trying to be really diligent of, like, I'm a note taker, trying to be diligent about, like, just pay attention, because you're gonna miss something while you're trying to take the notes, right? And I haven't learned shorthand yet.
Yeah, we all are. Don't worry. That's the nature of human experience.
Yeah. A couple of things that you said that really just kind of, they checked my soul in a good way.
Bell ringer. That's what I call it.
Yeah. How can I thrive in the world when my body works? And you can feel free to pick up on one of them. When you were stronger, you didn't feel like this.
Yeah.
And you're not a light switch.
Your process.
Yeah. Those three almost made me cry.
they almost made me cry. Because that, you know, the having Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I'm always really careful about how I frame it, because I never want somebody else with a chronic illness to feel a moral obligation to make it into something it's not for them.
Right.
But for me, it's my literal superpower.
Yeah.
And I would not have the insight and the toolkit and the unconditional positive regard for other people's suffering if I didn't have EDS. I'm convinced that I wouldn't, because I wouldn't have been forced to have all of that struggle and the wisdom that comes with it. And it's funny, because I'm high functioning enough that, like, I get questioned by doctors a lot, and even my husband will, like, forget. Be like, no, dude, I told you that I'm having neck pain. That's because I literally can't move my head to the right at all. like, shut up.
Tell me again, what's the official name of the
condition? Yeah, so I've, so it's German last names, of course. So Ehlers, Ehlers, Ehlers-Danlos, Danlos. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I have the hypermobility type, which is, I mean, they rename it like every couple of years, so I don't remember what type number it is, but essentially it's the connective tissue, your class three collagen fibers. It's the connective tissue that support my musculoskeletal system. My collagen fibers don't overlap as much as, like, a normie. And so for anybody who listening that doesn't know anything about musculoskeletal systems, your collagen fibers then make up all of your connective tissues. So, like, the Velcro that supports my scaffolding in my body, those strips of Velcro don't overlap as much as somebody else. But the only thing that makes your collagen fibers longer, other than chemical intervention, is resistance training, strength training. And so the very thing that that physical therapist told me not to do is the only thing that would make me better.
How about that?
And they thought they were doing a good job. They thought, in their current understanding of their wisdom, that they were keeping me safe. And so I have no anger and animosity toward that person anymore. And that has also taken a lot of work, because I was very mad about it and defensive for a really long time.
I mean, just that, the only thing that makes me better is strength training. Like,
yes, strong as all hell.
Right. Like, so many analogies are running through my head right now, just the things that make you stronger. Because I was teaching a class the other day, and I teach a varied population of people, but I was teaching specifically, it was originally designed as a Parkinson's movement class, people living with Parkinson's.
Oh, that's God's work. My grandmother has Parkinson's. It's particularly dear to my heart.
In so many ways. And I think I'm walking in to bless them, and I end up walking out blessed.
Yeah.
But this particular group, they saw the title of the class. It was called Balance and Stability. And so they all signed up for it, and none of them have Parkinson's. So we've agreed to just keep going, because they keep showing up, right? And the class kept growing. So we were like, let's just still teach it with the frame of mind of, if someone comes in who has Parkinson's, like, that's the first order of business, right? And then they can all still benefit from the movement patterns and just reframing their brains, even, of, oh, I can't do that, you know? So at any rate, there was a fairly new participant, and we were doing seated band work for just shoulder mobility and like me really gauging what can they do and what have they convinced themselves that my shoulders don't do that. And me not having their medical history record, I just kind of have to go with what they tell me, and me knowing the body and watching them overcompensate in different areas. And I kind of geek out over that stuff. So I'm like, let me show you what you actually can do, you know? So I had them sit down and they take the band behind their back and loop it under their arms to do, you know, a chest press with a tube, right? And the one lady, she's complaining and she's like, this is really difficult. And I'm like, it could be if you were like post-surgery, like I'm like running through my brain all the possible ways that this is really difficult, but it was the green bands. If you've ever used bands before, you know, the green ones are like really pretty easy, right? And so I'm like, okay, trying to figure out how do I make some modifications so she feels really successful. And before I could even change what we were doing, the participant beside her said, oh, you looped the band around the back of your chair, not you. And so then she figures it out, puts it in the right position. And she's like, well, how about that? The thing that's supposed to make me stronger was actually pulling me back. And so she said it. And then she sat back in her chair and was like, whoa, that was a life lesson right there. She was like, man, how'd you do that? I was like, I didn't even try. It just unfolded and you owned it and you stepped into it and received it. And she sat there for what felt like a good 5 minutes, letting it just roll through her head. And the wild thing is that the first time she came to my class, she said, I came because I saw the class was called Balance and Stability. I didn't know it was an exercise class. I thought it was going to be a class to help me learn how to balance and be more stable in my life.
It is.
And then before she left, she said, I have to tell you, everything that we were doing really translated into how much anger I've been carrying in my life and how I thought being more angry was going to make me stronger, but it was making me weaker. And so she was like, I feel like I'm supposed to be in this class because something else is happening in me and I don't know what to do with it. I was like,
amazing.
Praise God. Because I was hoping that you were going to get that, because wow. You know what I mean? And it just like, I don't know, like I watch the people who, and that's why I asked you for clarity of the actual title or name or whatever you want to call it of what has been diagnosed in your body, because sometimes the people that have been given the diagnosis, they know what to expect from the diagnosis. They know kind of the protocol to consider, or even if it's experimental protocol, because according to the documentation, this is what my body is doing or is about to do, and here's how I can receive it and to be well or to not be well. But for the ones that are walking around without a diagnosis, that to where you said a moment ago or earlier about learning how to maximize my human potential when my body is stronger, or like just knowing what I need without knowing what's quote unquote wrong with me, right?
Yeah.
I completely subscribe to positive psychology, and that's the format that I use in my coaching of helping people. Like, hey, what if there's actually something really right with you, right? Like I remember helping someone comb through their nutrition and understand how to just eat for themselves and not some formula, but eat to what really makes you feel better. And she started to notice that like her skin was breaking out. And she was like, whatever you're having me eat must be wrong, because why is my skin doing this? I'm like, well, maybe your body's flushing itself out and you're actually for a while now doing something right. And she was like, no, that doesn't make any sense, right? So I put all that together of just like the person that doesn't have the diagnosis, but they don't even know what's good, quote unquote, for them, because they've just been doing what everybody else is doing, or God forbid, doing whatever was the headline for the month, you know, And I think of my own self back in 2014 being undiagnosed with a diagnosis of not knowing the diagnosis, where doctors literally didn't know what was happening to my body. I couldn't walk. They thought that it was a connective tissue disorder. They thought it was MS. They thought it was sickle cell. They ruled out everything and couldn't figure it out. And I come to the final conclusion with a neurologist that my body had shut down because it was tired of trying to be something that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I had all these stories trapped in my muscles and all these stories trapped in my memory. And I love the fact that you said, what if you were willing to respect and nurture who you are right now and take the journey to be well? And so since 2014, I've been on this journey to be well. And like, here I am now, years later, and I still don't know who I am. Right? I'm like, when I grow up, I'll let y'all know. Like,
I ask people in their 90s who they want to be when they grow up, because you're not done until you're done. And then we can talk about what happens next. Maybe that's a whole different podcast.
Right.
But, you know, it used to be when people would say, like, oh, it's all in your head, right? People, the conventional reaction is to feel dismissed.
Yeah.
And I think to choose something different starts with the recognition that the idea that mind, body, and soul, or spirit, or whatever you call it, consciousness, that they're separate, that is a, I'm gonna really go out on a limb, and you can reel me back if you want me to reel back. That is a colonialist myth. That is a mythology that was perpetrated from a very specific set of worldviews that happen to be the dominant worldviews in the West. But we can cite examples from all over the world where that splitting of the human experience is considered to be its own pathology. And, Gabor Mate put out a beautiful book last year called The Myth of Normal. And anybody who wants to really go down a rabbit hole on this set of ideas, I encourage them to explore it. But, you know, what are emotions? What are feelings? It is information from your embodied experience about something that goes back to before you had language, yeah. Right? And what I hear you describing is a moment of profound insight into yourself. Fortunately, facilitated by a neurologist who didn't have their head where they can't see the sun. And the realization that these identities, the act that you felt you needed to put on until 2014, was causing a denial of your authentic self. And with that denial came pathology that someone couldn't put a label on. And when we choose to lean in to ourselves and go, okay, what is that feeling that you're having? If emotions are information, what information is my body trying to tell me right now with the feeling that I am having? I've had a fair amount of diagnosed trauma in my life. I've been diagnosed with complex PTSD, along with a recurrent depression and a bunch of other things. But when I look at my childhood, it's easy for me to point to be like, oh yeah, that's because these things happened. That got encoded into what I thought of as my personality, not understanding that those things were malleable and that I could choose to lean in. What is that feeling that I am having? And learn, like I said, 20, 30 years later, the lessons that I didn't have the language for at 8 years old. And it sounds to me like you have had that experience and you know exactly what I'm on about, which I highlight for the benefit of the listener to know, like, this is a path. This is a journey that requires you to be radically honest with yourself about what is going on, and then to respond with self-compassion and grace and patience and persistence. But it's worth it.
Yeah, there's going to have to be a part two. So just
I'm down.
Stay ready.
I'm down.
Because seriously, like, man, you're gonna make me cry, because like the work,
right?
like what a gift and a get to like meet yourself as yourself, and you're like, hey, I think I like you.
Yeah. And I think that's the point where that conversation with the old self becomes appreciation.
Yeah. Like,
because I can't be this if I didn't have EDS, if I didn't grow up in an abusive and neglectful household, if I didn't have a car accident that nearly killed me, if I didn't tick them off, if I didn't have that, I couldn't be here.
Yeah.
And here's where I get to do my mission, right? If we're both Wonder Woman, I don't get called to the mission if I didn't get yanked out of Themyscira. Period.
Listen, I'm saying this is why we got to have it part two, because I'm like, for goodness sake, like for what it's worth. If we, like you talked earlier about like sometimes people want to live on that space of regret. Like if I tried my best, like sometimes you hear these, oh, if you could do it over, would you do it differently? Nope. Because I wouldn't be sitting here right now having this conversation with Darlene, because to your point, like, I mean, man, our stories are so, there's a thread, there's so many threads that are coming in our stories. But had I not experienced that, I wouldn't have been able to come to this. It's not, I used to say it was like this culmination of a moment of like, okay, now I get to figure out who I am. But that wasn't even the moment. It was, that was just kind of this wake up call of like, are you really ready to find out who you are? Are you really ready to know that, like, and it goes back further back down the line of like, my dad didn't know who he was, because he's trying to figure out, like, hold on a second, right? Like, it's a whole.
Oh, I got one for you. Hold on, I got one for you. I love sharing this one. Is your dad good at calculus? Mm-hmm. Is your dad good at calculus and physics and like complex mathematics? Yeah. See, you don't even know what I'm on about. Answer.
Yeah. I'm like,
is he good at complicated math?
I don't know.
Okay, cool. Most people's parents are not good at advanced mathematics, because most people aren't, right?
I know where you're going. Keep going.
Okay, I'm going to go. We talked about a second ago about like appreciation for your former self, because that's how you get here. And I know for me, I've had a lot of anger and resentment over the years at the people who were my caregivers, my nurturers, because why didn't you fill in the blank?
Yeah.
And what I've come to the conclusion of is, if I know that the journey of truly knowing oneself and integrating and bringing it into your life is hard, and my ancestors, my genetic ancestors, which is, you know, not all of our ancestors, right? It's a very specific subset of what the ancestors are. But my genetic ancestors were doing the best they could with what they understood. And I have insight that they didn't have yet, or they would have behaved differently. And I can't be mad at them for not knowing advanced calculus. My grandfather didn't finish the fifth grade. How could I be angry with them for not understanding what is like varsity level emotional EQ, right?
Right,
right.
Right? Right, man, right, right, right. So many.
And but we get to choose. We get to have the insight and decide, okay, this particular ripple of intergenerational trauma goes no further. And maybe I'm going to get some other things wrong, because that is the nature of humanity. But I'm also going to teach these tools to the next generation, whether we're talking genetically or otherwise. We're going to put these tools further out into the world. We're going to continue to refine them so that the generations to come, and I genuinely believe with all going on in the world, these next two generations are the make or break. So we, you know, I'm an elder millennial. I have the impressions you are also a millennial.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to be the generation that figures these things out and teaches them to the kids coming up right now, because these next two generations matter more than any generation that has come.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I don't think I've said that out loud before. So there you go. There you go.
There we go. Breaking news, folks. Like, I mean, like, I'm with you, because I look back at, even just as I'm coming to learn more about my story and the lineage that I come from, and relearning my father's family, that I didn't really know growing up, just because of the makeup and the dynamic of my parents' relationship. And as I'm learning him, I'm forgiving myself and forgiving him. And there's so many layers and opportunity of forgiveness that then bring about this new level of grace for me, a new level of grace for my mother. Just so many layers. And I started the process of writing what I thought was a novel that I'm learning now is not a novel. And I'm having to like pull these experts in of like, help me make sure I'm writing this and saying this correctly to serve people well, both in the side of like honoring someone else's stories, honoring my story, and then helping people to go discover their own stories and be healed in the process of the work that they're reading, that I'm writing. But that's not the one and done. There's more to come, right? Like it could just be like the appetizer of the appetizer. You know what I mean? Like
I do.
And it's been, the writing for me has been scary, because that means, to what you said, I have to be willing to get radically honest and approach it with grace and know that grace begets grace. And I sat in on a book reading for a novel that her characters, she said, were loosely written by some, about like, they were kind of similarities of family members of hers. And she went to the family members and said like, hey, I'm writing this character sketch and she just makes me think of you. And I can tell you a little bit about the character, but like, just know that it's not you. And so the book was finally written. And she said her family, as they read these characters, they couldn't pinpoint, oh, that's so-and-so, but because there were like little intricacies that were like everybody in one person. And they finally decided that the main character was one of their cousins they had never met. Right. And so I had asked her, I said, like, how did you do that and still tell your family's lineage and the breakthroughs and the discoveries? And there's still more. How did you do that and honor your family? And she said, kind of to what you said, she said, I knew that there was a story to be told, that generationally the story tells with me and the curses, so to speak, are broken with me. But if I didn't write the story, then their story would never be told. You know what I mean? And so it just, I don't know, like it speaks volumes to the work of wellness that it carries on generation for generation for generation. And for the sake of time, like, cause I keep going clearly, like there's so much more to discuss. But even as you were sharing about just the integration of self, of mind, body, soul, spirit, oneness, whatever you would call it, just our being, as you were talking, like there's, it's not random or coincidental that the two of us are both Wonder Woman fanatics, because as you were talking, all I kept thinking is, woman, you are a wonder.
Oh, thank you.
Like that of like, and what a gift that you get to tell and invite people into that space to go and discover their own wonder, right? Because it's not a mold that we're trying to fit into. It's like a discovery. The word that I've been ruminating on and trying to like understand it is fortitude. It's the word that I've been camped on for probably about a month, and I keep seeing it pop up in different spaces. And I've recently discovered that it's a noun, not an adjective. So like, woman, you are a wonder would almost be parallel of like, woman, you are fortitude.
Thank you.
Right. Like,
that's all, that's the only possible and appropriate response is just thank you. Thank you for seeing it and reflecting it. Part of my own work is being able to accept praise and appreciation. And I'm just really working on sponging instead of deflecting. Because I think that's a thing we're taught as a faux form of humility, as performative humility. And I'm trying to break that in myself and find what the authentic positive version of that looks like. You know, I guess
for your grace and your, just your willingness to be an open book in a space, oh, yeah, that, like, is unfamiliar across a screen on a microphone. Sure. And it's not like we've known each other for what, a few months? Like, for you to be willing to go to be that vulnerable, and I hate using the word vulnerable because
it's the right word.
Yeah, like, I think honestly, even to your point of like the performative humility, sometimes we perform vulnerability and authenticity, sure, hashtag it, and it comes off as like, okay, so where's your next stop on your tour of vulnerability?
Yeah, my vulnerability tour.
Right.
But
right,
I think
right. Oh,
there's two things that you shared in the story that I want to circle back to and just highlight. The first is around calling, right? You described this author's calling to share the story, and how much less effectively could she channel that calling if she was exhausted or hungry, or her, you know, in my case, like, your body hurts in ways that prevent you to focus, right? Like, all of the things where the lack of taking genuine care, and I don't mean hashtag self-care, but I mean genuine, authentic care for oneself. You know, one of my concepts that guides my work is the belief that self-care is actually a spiritual practice, because you can't channel your calling if you are treating your body like a rental car. And second to that, to what you were describing, is that point of integration of knowing yourself and liking yourself and accepting yourself. If, and again, you're like, hey, no, I told you we were going to talk about my woo-woo beliefs. I knew it would happen. That if I genuinely believe that at the core of my being is an untouchable, you know, spiritual woo, right? That like cannot be corrupted by the physical world.
Yeah.
Then my vulnerability is no longer a threat, because wherever I am, as long as I'm me, I'm still home on some level. As long as I continue to care for and nurture that authentic self, sharing with you who I am is no longer scary. Yeah, there's boundaries. There's things I'm not going to say on this mic to you right now for the internet, like whatever. But the things that I have shared to me don't feel threatening, because I already know who I am. I already know my stories. I already know what I've been through, and I've accepted them and brought them in a, not a way that wounds, but a way that heals. And so the open-heartedness comes as an extension of that work. It becomes freedom.
Wow.
That's my 2 cents on it.
It's worth more than 2 cents. I have thoroughly been blessed by this conversation, and no joke, like, there's a part two coming, because
absolutely, sign me up, baby, I'm down.
I mean, like, I just want to sit with you for a couple of hours and just,
I'm down whenever you want,
because like, it just, what a gift to be in the presence of people that are genuinely, I don't know, genuinely committed to helping other people find their fullest self while they're also doing the work to find their fullest self. Because the assumption is that if you're helping people do the work, that you've already, like, you're done, you've arrived. Or there's either an assumption that you've arrived, or there's an assumption that you think you have arrived. And like, talking with you, there's neither.
No, you said it in your intro. Oh, everybody's a coach now and they don't have their lives together. Yeah, because that's not what coaching is.
Right.
And, you know, I am so grateful that we circled back to this, because I had meant to circle back to it sooner. And there is a pressure and it's a self-pressure. I'm not saying anyone else is doing this, but in the positive psychology space, it's around happiness. In the wellness coaching space, it's around being, you know, like, radically well. If I don't look like Gwyneth Paltrow, if I'm not making seven figures, if I'm not, I know, right? Like, it hurts me to even say the sentence, because I, for the listener who can't see, I am 6'1". I am Caucasian, but I am not Gwyneth Paltrow. I am a big woman, proudly so. And not only will I never look like that, I never aspire towards that. And that was a big problem for me in the fitness space, because I have actually been, I've had my corporate overlords and my former employer make comments about how our female trainers don't look like trainers. And I was unquestionably one of the people he was talking about. And I may not look like the cover of a fitness magazine, but I bet you I know more than most of the people on the covers of the fitness magazine. And I would argue that they're probably not that healthful. But as wellness practitioners and really any coaches, the sign of an impactful coach is not, look at this life that I have. Don't you want to emulate it? I would argue that that's actually probably your least impactful coach. Mm. It's, am I actively using the tools in my own life when the inevitable challenges of being human come up? Mm. That's the person you want to learn from. You don't seek the trainer that has the genetic gift because they don't actually understand how to help people. You seek the trainer who has gone on a path and you let them help you with your path. Same with a coach.
On that note.
I could talk, Amia.
It's so good. I'm like, man, okay, y'all. So just stay tuned. There's a part two coming. So in the show notes, you will be able to find all the ways and wheres to stay connected with Darlene. Seriously, follow the message that she's preaching, because it's a gift, and it's breaking through the noise. Even it's breaking through the noise in the fitness world, it's breaking through the noise in the coaching world. And if I have anything to do with it, not just from a standpoint of like the outward facing community hearing what you're saying, but the industry facing community to hear what you have to say, because if we're going to keep doing this work, it has to be from this space that we've talked about today. Because I mean, gone are the days of like, do as I say, not as I do. You know what I mean? Like, please practice what you're preaching, because otherwise, like, we're pushing people in ditches, and we can't do that anymore. We can't. It's life is way too short. And I care too much about who you are and who you're becoming. Y'all, let's do the work together. Seriously, yeah. And there's enough room and enough opportunity for us to all be well. If any of this conversation, I really hope that you took notes or came back and listened to it a couple of times. If any of the conversation has, like I said at the top of the show, has sparked some interest in, okay, what comes next? You can always reach out to me and I will point you to some resources. Again, I'm going to have links to connect with Darlene and some of the coaching work that she does, as well as her Substack that she mentioned. I'll have some resources to link you up with if maybe you're looking for a wellness coach. And there's another episode that we did that was called Why Coaches Need Coaches. So don't think that because you're a coach, you can't be coached. We don't ever arrive. Anyway, I could go off on another tangent and we keep talking and carry this conversation into like five other topics. So I hope that this conversation has helped you to adjust your focus. I really do pray that you would lean in with a heart of grace and an invitation to find your truest self, not to what Darlene said, not from a position of like, when I find my true self, then I'm there, but like be willing to unlearn some of the narratives, some of the rhythms, some of the habits, even potentially some of the goals that you've set for yourself. And then let's keep going. Because until we're not going anymore, there's still paths to pave. And yet that might mean that some of the people you were going with look at you like you've gone wooey. Just wave to them and blow a dandelion. They'll be happy. So, anyway, y'all, until I get to chat with you again, I pray that you would be blessed and be well. Y'all take care.